It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Today we spend the hour in Asia, more specifically China. Later in the hour, Lynn Hicks, business editor at the Des Moines Register, will be with us. He's just finished a week-long series on agricultural ties between Iowa and China. But first to Hong Kong, this special administrative region of the People's Republic of China. Today, as we heard in the news at the top of the hour, thousands of protesters listened and watched large screens from the streets as student leaders debated their call for full democracy for this Chinese-run city with government leaders. They're trying to end the weeks of occupation of major traffic arteries in Hong Kong, a city of about 7 million. As widely was expected, there was no breakthrough in the talks. Joining us now, Art Durnev. He is Associate Professor of Finance at the University of Iowa Tippey College of Business. He has just returned, as a matter of fact, last night from 2 weeks teaching in Hong Kong, where he taught at the University of Iowa's MBA program in that city. Art Durnev, welcome to our program.
Thank you for your invitation. Great to be here.
Many will be surprised that you're functioning after it's 13 hours ahead of time there in Hong Kong. That means it's about 1 a.m. for your body right now. We'll try to get you off out the door, perhaps to a nap. I'm not sure, but let's talk a little bit about your experiences there. The offices, the University of Iowa MBA program, is right in the heart near where the protests are?
Yes. There are three sites, main sites of the protests. And I stayed in the hotel in one of the sites, Causeway Bay. And the teaching site was right where the government buildings are, such called Admiralty. So that's exactly what the teaching spot. So.
And you went amongst the protesters. What kind of experience did you have there? Who did you meet?
Well, since the teaching spot was right there, and this is a weekend program, this is actually where there were like big gatherings of protesters closer towards like the night and during weekends. So I had a chance just to walk around. I would take the metro, and it would be the same entrance from direct entrance from the metro. But it literally became like a tourist attraction. So what you read in the news here, I had some concerns about going there, that the teaching spot was right there. But the local people just took me around to walk around, and immediately you see that there are lots of people bringing kids, taking pictures, trying to help protesters and just walking around. So it did look extremely peaceful.
Mm-hmm. Did you talk with any of the protesters?
Oh, absolutely, because most of the protesters, they come from the student body, so there would be young undergraduate students. And the most striking thing was that they organized such called study corners where they put up the desks and they would solve their homework because it's Hong Kong, it's an Asian society, very competitive, very success-oriented. So even if they stay there for now 3 weeks, their homework has to be done. So I actually volunteered to help some of the students from the local universities with their finance homework, and it was very well received. So,
how do they understand, the student protesters you talked with, how do they understand their struggle? In what context?
Well, we all know the basic background, how the protest started. So just by, you know, reading the posters and reading their paintings and the large printouts, because they hang from like big posters from up the bridge there. So you can see that it's a basic struggle for democracy, for the freedom of press, and for more democratic elections than what is currently allowed by their special arrangements with mainland China government.
Mm-hmm. When Hong Kong was returned from British to Chinese rule, that was in the late 1990s.
97.
And there was a one country, two systems formula that was that they were obligated to. It allows some autonomy for Hong Kong, but specifies universal suffrage. Now, I guess it has to do with the definition of what democracy is. The argument is over whether Beijing gets to appoint the people who are ultimately elected, right?
Right. So, well, there are different views on that. And actually, Since the protests do harm the business community and the business climate of Hong Kong, I listen to lots of their radio shows and I watch a lot of TV. So actually, the anti-protest sentiment mostly comes from expat community, from big bank CEOs who would be American and who would make a somewhat valid point that their general election is going to be in 2017. And the current Beijing, mainland China rule is that the candidates would have to pass through more strict process of being nominated. And they were making a good point that the system Beijing is proposing is somewhat similar to the system you have in the United States.
How so?
It's a multiple stage process. You know, that it's not that you just collect the signatures and get on the voting ballot. Well, you have to be somewhat have some pre-screening process from the Beijing
government.
But
in this case, all the pre-screening
has to be done by
High communist officials.
This is correct. This is correct. So, you know, so both sides have their valid point. But again, it's not surprising that their system is getting under pressure from the Chinese government. And it's one country, two systems. But, you know, through time, I'm afraid it will become more like one system.
Mm-hmm. Art Durnev is an associate professor of finance at the University of Iowa Tippie College of Business. If you just joined us, he just returned last night from 2 weeks teaching in Hong Kong for the University of Iowa's MBA program. What has been the impact on the economy there in Hong Kong? And remind us, Hong Kong represents what in the global world of finance?
Well, Hong Kong is literally number one financial center in the world. The size of the financial center is comparable to the ones in New York City or in London. It's a very wealthy society. Let's not forget about it, that it's by income per capita, it's the around 8th or 10th wealthiest country. And for 7 million people, it's a very wealthy and very large country. So the protesters pretty much block three main roads there. This is where the government offices are. This is where the company headquarters are and the major banks. So I think the type of the businesses that suffered the most would be, as always, taxi drivers and retail stores, not only small retail stores, but also like major outlets like Gap. Like the Gap store was closed there. Mm-hmm. So lots of complaints. Initially, there were complaints from the banking community, but the banking community, it's absolutely fascinating there. They're very well trained because the banking community, they just started working from home using Skype. Hmm. I think this is where the future of business is, working from home, from your living room using Skype. Because in Hong Kong, there are three major typhoons, weather calamities, a year. And they happen every year, where roads get flooded and where many parts of Hong Kong get shut down during those hurricane seasons there. So that was the comparison. So all major banks, they have the specific plan to have business meeting over Skype. So the impact, negative impact on business and community and economy is comparable to one of those three weather calamities that happen every year.
So you're saying not as significant as perhaps?
It's not as significant as people imagine. Mm-hmm. Because now we learned how to work from home using teleconferencing and internet.
What sense did you get of whether the protesters, how much sympathy they had among the population of Hong Kong?
They get a lot of sympathy. And I think all younger people are sympathetic. For example, where the spot where I was teaching, there were lots of local people helping us with some logistical and administration stuff, and they were all extremely sympathetic. And a funny event happened to me is that the first class I was teaching, I was wearing a yellow T-shirt and yellow jeans. And those happened to be protest color.
Oh, just by coincidence?
Just absolutely by coincidence. So so they were immediately asking me whether I support protesters, and I was decided to be sympathetic, and I said, "Well, I don't understand and feel their point." So the local people actually they took a picture of me, And they made a large, colorful printout. And there was a kind of like international wall of support where you see postings from people around the world. So since originally I'm from Russia and there's a big Russian community in Hong Kong, so I wrote something in Russian there. And that poster still hangs in there. And they even, I think, published in one of their newspapers.
So you're teaching as part of the University of Iowa MBA program for the University of Iowa Tippie College of Business. What precisely are you teaching?
I teach international finance and managerial finance. So I teach major finance classes.
Mm-hmm. So your students are among the protesters? Were they?
No, the students are a little bit older than the protesters are. The students are more around 30, 35 years old. So they have families. It's a very diverse student body. I had students from Hong Kong. I had students from Australia, expats living there. It's a huge expat community in Hong Kong. I had three American students. I had Canadian students. I had students from Singapore. And I also had many students from Taiwan. So not all of them live and work in Hong Kong. I had a couple of German students who were taking a 12-hour train from Beijing just for those classes back and forth. And my students from Taiwan, they were flying from Taiwan. It's a two-hour class.
Okay, two questions. Why does the University of Iowa have an MBA program in Hong Kong?
Hong Kong, it's a very business-oriented society, and there are a lot of opportunities there. So many business schools, they have excellent local universities, local business schools, but many American business schools, they established their program. They even built their own campuses. University of Iowa was one of the first MBA programs from overseas in Hong Kong. Recently, to give you an example, University of Chicago, they moved their entire campus from Singapore to Hong Kong. And the idea is to be as close to China as possible because this is where the business opportunities are.
Mm-hmm. Do your students there, do they know where Iowa is? Is Iowa?
They do. They do. They come here for their graduation. And
oh, they actually come to Iowa.
They have a choice of coming to Iowa for one semester and for graduation. So what they get a good MBA education. They get a University of Iowa diploma. And they pay a fraction of the cost what, for example, University of Chicago charges there in Iowa.
Mm-hmm. What are the aspirations of your students? What will they be in some years' time?
Many of them come from with non-finance background. I had students who work in marketing. I had students who work in communications. I had students who work in human resources. And they want to get more general business education, and it directly links to their future promotion from wherever they work.
What other sort of experiences did you have there in terms of through your business eyes, your finance eyes? You had companies before the broadcast. You were talking about a startup that you encountered there?
Yes, I had a meeting with a few startups. Very exciting. It's a very exciting environment for startups in Hong Kong. And one of the examples I can give you is that there is a new Chinese product. It's an umbrella, but it looks like a hair dryer. So it just blows air. And it dissipates rain droplets. I haven't had the chance to test it. It's really fascinating.
So you would see people walking around with this?
Yes, they already do.
It looks like an umbrella, but it blows.
I'm going to order one.
It blows air up.
It creates a kind of like air bubble. Fascinating. You charge it. They have like batteries there. But what's really interesting is that there was a relatively large order by the protest groups, because it turns out it also works really well against tear gas. So I have a lot of business ideas, because if you think about how many spots we have in this world where police use tear gas, that becomes a really good protection device. It dissipates tear gas.
So you think this startup producing this new type of umbrella has some potential?
Well, I think my Hong Kong students are already working on this idea, actually, mm-hmm. because it's one of their project ideas.
Did you witness or any of the government pushing back? We know they were breaking up some of the barricades, some of the constructions that they've made.
Yes, actually, I kind of like witnessed it firsthand. I used to go for a very long run there. across those areas, because one good thing about the protests is that those streets are now are not available to traffic, so people use it to run, right, for their morning exercise. So I was at one of the major spots at 4 o'clock in the morning, and this is exactly the time where the police started removing their site. So there was like a big crane there, and the police completely blocked that area. And this is probably the only time when I had this uncomfortable feeling that it's surrounded by the police. So if you're within the circle, they wouldn't let anyone in and anyone out. And then you just don't know what the next move is going to be from either protests, which are, again, seem to be very peaceful protests, or the police. So that was the only time when I saw that there can be potentially some violence. And from time to time, and from time to time, let's be clear on that in different parts, there were some instances of violence, of course.
Do you sense always sort of animosity between the forces and the protesters, or can there
you
even
can
be
hardly,
sympathy?
During the day, you can hardly see any police there. During the day, you don't see really much police force over there, which is also sometimes gives you uncomfortable feeling because there are lots of clashes between protesters and other side of protesters who are against this democratic movement. This is probably where you want to have really well-trained police that can separate the crowds from direct fighting. Right. But again, the police presence was minimal.
You've been teaching for how many years? You've been a professor in academic sphere?
For over 10 years. Before I was the University of Miami, I was teaching. I was also a professor in Canada, McGill University, mm-hmm. Now University of Iowa.
How do you see any differences in general between the students there in Hong Kong and the students here in North America?
Well, the comparison would be executive students I teach here in Iowa, who would be top-level managers from companies like John Deere and Rockwell Collins. So, no, it's a very global world. It's a very global world, and when I teach in different parts, and I had teaching experience in Japan and Brazil, in Russia, in China, in Hong Kong, different parts of the world, and no, the students are motivated. It's a very global world, and the students are very hardworking and in general business school students. They know what they want.
Of course, what's on many minds here is Tiananmen Square. That was the massacre that took place in 1989, actually in Beijing, when pro-democracy protests were quashed by the military.
Right.
It's unclear how many died, but hundreds of many hundreds of civilians died in that. What are your thoughts as you reflect on how Beijing is handling this differently and how it's a different time?
Yeah, I think they're handling it very well. They express their dissatisfaction, but they do not get directly involved. And that was a really clear message from Beijing, that they will not get involved directly. So I also followed the Chinese state media, where obviously there is much more censorship than comparing to media in Hong Kong. So you could feel this the general tone of being dissatisfied with protests in Hong Kong, but the message is clear, they're not going to get involved. So the probability of repeating Tiananmen Square is absolutely minimal.
Mm-hmm. Where are the protests of the different factions getting their news from?
Well, they had many different types of applications. So, like, for example, I just followed the live blog by their major newspaper, South China Morning Post. But people use Facebook. In Hong Kong, people use Twitter. And they use, it's called a new application. It's like something like a Fire app. Mm-hmm. Fire app, and I think it was really fascinating because originally I'm from Russia. This is, I think, a Russian type of software. And it's presumably very hard to control and very hard to block.
And so social media was playing a big part in these protests.
Oh, absolutely. Anywhere in the world. These days, everything what happens, because, you know, it requires enormous coordination effort right now among the protesters. For example, they removed the site from Admiralty site, and in 20 minutes, they were rebuilding those barricades using bamboo sticks. So the protesters are also extremely now knowledgeable and coordinate their effort through the social media.
Mm-hmm. And What do you see when you look in the future of these protests? Are you planning to go back, or are you scheduled to go back?
Well, if I go back, it would be probably next year. But they started talking. So while I was there, I could feel it that they just couldn't negotiate. So the demands from the government side in Hong Kong and the demands from the student side were just too diverse. So now they're sitting, as we speak, they're sitting at the table and they're negotiating. And they set up those big screens that general public can watch it live, the negotiation process between the government and students, protesters.
Mm-hmm. Beijing has not given any signal that they will compromise at all. So what are the students thinking might be within reach? How do they think this will end, given that Beijing shows no sign of compromise?
Well, that's actually very interesting, because I don't know what the outcome of those negotiations would be. Because what the students are asking to have their government officials to be directly elected, I don't think Beijing is going to compromise, and I don't think the Hong Kong government is going to really compromise on that point. So I don't know what the final outcome is going to be. So if you ask me, will this protest end anytime soon? I would say I don't think so. And the most fascinating thing for me was how resilient the students are, living on the street under it's hot and humid weather for 3 weeks. I saw the same people living on the streets for 3 weeks at the same time getting their homework done. I mean, it's absolutely admirable. So those kids are very, very tough there.
Art Durnev, in the next half hour, we're going to be talking about the agricultural ties between Iowa and China. As a professor of finance, what do you have to say about that? Iowa has some strong links.
Definitely. I teach executives classes here in Iowa, and I know that companies like John Deere, their major foreign operations are in countries like China and Russia and in India.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And a number of companies there. I want to thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Art Durnev, Associate Professor of Finance at the University of Iowa Tippey College of Business. He's just returned last night from 2 weeks in Hong Kong, where he was teaching at the University of Iowa's MBA program. Thank you, and hope you have a nice short work day, Art, so that you can get rested up after that tremendous jet lag.
Thank you.
Coming up in just a moment, we'll talk with Lynn Hicks. He's the business editor at the Des Moines Register. He's just finished a week-long series focusing on ag ties between Iowa and China. If you have questions, perhaps your farming company, perhaps your farm is somehow connected with China, we'd like to hear your question, your comment. 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org. Iowa Public Radio is also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. Coming back, looking at the agricultural ties between China and Iowa. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. Thank you.